Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports. I'm Kurt Heelan, managing editor of the NBA page, and today, this is actually going to be a fun one. Drew Dinsick, who works for NBC as one of the hand captors, if you follow NBC Sports Edge, where there's fantasy and handicapping info, you know who he is. Really smart basketball mind who follows this closely, is watching the playoffs and looking for edges, and thought we'd bring him in and take a handicapper's view of the finals, the NBA playoffs as we head towards the finals. Drew, thanks for jumping in. It's great to have you in all the way from down the street, it turns out.
It's great to be here. And I honestly, this is the eve of probably the most exciting playoffs that I can remember of my life. Usually we're at this point in the season and we're, you know, there's two or three teams that you have circled as these are realistic title contenders. This year, it feels wide open. I mean, the West is a little less competitive than a normal year, but the East, you have, you know, you can make a case for 5-6 teams, really. And then similarly, you know, as you look across the odds for all of these series, it speaks to that. The only series that's truly lopsided is Bucks Bulls. Everything else is going to be pretty competitive. So this is going to be a really fun next couple months as we get into the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that the East is, that's part of the fun of the East is I can make a case for or against everybody. But let's start with the team getting the mad disrespect, if you ask their fan base. Well, they all think that, I guess. But the Miami Heat are actually third or fourth longest odds to win it all, depending on, I didn't look this morning at points bet, but I think they were third longest behind, I know they're behind the Bucks and Celtics. Is that fair to them, or have they not earned the trust that they can make that kind of run?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not fair. I mean, I don't think these are fair prices. I think that the market is a little tilted. That doesn't mean that they're, you know, that I have strong conviction that they're going to ultimately win. This is all simply a matter of, like, is the number right? That's, you know, just in general, the philosophy of, you know, kind of placing wagers in the futures market. I'm looking to try to capture best price available for the teams that I think have a realistic shot over the balance of the season. And usually by the time we get to this point and we know the path for every team, I'm usually looking at the board and I'm shrugging my shoulders like, yep, everything looks fair. Yep, no edges. You know, glad I bet it when I bet it in January, December, whenever. That's not really the case, though, this year. I do think there is value on the Heat. Heat currently tied for third best odds with the Brooklyn Nets, behind the Celtics, behind the Bucks. And, you know, it's surprising to see it shaped up this way for a couple reasons. I think you look at the other contenders in the Eastern Conference, namely the Sixers, Raptors, Bulls, and presumably the Hawks, and they all have pretty fatal flaws, particularly in a best of seven series. And if you then boil down to, okay, well, these other four teams, Bucks, Celtics, Nets, Heat, they all have, you know, they check every box in terms of a team that could potentially win the conference. Well, the way that the bracket is shaped, the Heat are only going to have to play one of those teams. Celtics are going to have to play three. Nets would have to play three. Bucks would have to play two. And so the Heat have an absolute, you know, beyond just the home court advantage of being able to, you know, presumably have a game seven at home in a tight series. But they have, you know, the advantage of being able to presumably accumulate rest if they can get through their series round one, round two, a little bit cleaner than the likes of the Celtics, Nets. Every reasonable expectation is that the Celtics Nets is going to be just an absolute war. I mean, that one is going to be so fun to watch. There are so many angles to pick apart from a handicapping, from an analyst standpoint. But the idea that either of those teams runs the other over in short order, I find tough to believe. So there's going to be some attrition. There's going to be some fatigue that accumulates in that series. And then what is the prize for either of those teams that wins? Well, it's presumably a fresh Bucks team. And, you know, the idea that that would be a short series is also a tough ask, particularly if Boston has home court against the Bucks in that particular setup. And so, you know, there's going to be, some damage that accrues with the other three teams at the top that the Heat just aren't going to have to deal with. And, you know, the Heat, broadly well coached, broadly relatively deep. That doesn't ever really manifest an edge in the playoffs because, you know, lineups, you know, rotations shorten, and your top line talent, your closing five tends to matter more. But the Heat with their depth have lots of different combinations they can try. Eric Spoelstra has been, you know, has proven to be, in my opinion, at least, one of the best coaches in the Eastern Conference, if not all of the NBA. And he's got this team in a great spot, really, to make a little bit of a run. My fair price for the Heat in an Eastern Conference Finals against the likes of the Celtics, Nets, or Bucks would be about a pick 'em. And, you know, so the fact that you can get them at plus 450 now and presumably pick 'em in that same exact situation in the Eastern Conference Finals, to me at least, it makes sense as far as a fair play. So what's your general read on the Heat?
Yeah, see, I think you talk about the depth. What that gives them is scheme versatility, right? Like they can roll out different lineups and different looks and throw different guys at you. And it's the advantage that someone like Eric Spoelstra can take advantage of. Hey, I think the Clippers are sort of built the same way. They're not going to they're not going to beat the Suns in the first round, assuming they even beat the Pelicans, but they're not going to make it easy on you, right? Like, hey, we can come at you. You want to go small? We can go small. You want to go bigger? We can go bigger. The Heat have some of that. They can come at you a variety of ways. My question with them, it just comes down to, can they generate enough offense in the half court? If you have to have Tyler Hero out there to do that, now I've got a place to attack. So you really need Bubble Jimmy Butler back. Right? Like you need the Jimmy Butler who could just tear teams up. But if he's there, watch out, man. I'm with you. I think this team is a little undervalued because I think that they are fully capable of coming out of the East. And like you said, they're going to get what should be a relatively winnable, comfortable first round series. And then they, you know, we'll see what comes out of the 4 or 5 series there. I don't think that's easy, obviously, by any stretch. And we'll talk about that series. But the path is there for them to get through. And if you're getting peak Jimmy Butler and you're getting the half court offense you need, they certainly have the defense. They certainly can play, you know, everything else is right there for them. So I'm with you. I think that people are kind of looking past them because I don't know if we're looking at the sexy, shiny new objects or what, but.
Well, you know, there's a tendency of a lot of people who make picks to look at a series and take the best player and say, well, you know, this team has the best player, I'm going to back them. That's guiding a lot of people to say the Nets are going to beat the Celtics. That'll guide a lot of people to say the Bucks would beat the Celtics. That'll guide people to say any of those three teams will beat the Heat. That'll guide people to say the Sixers would beat the Heat if that's your 1-4 matchup, right? And the reality is this Heat team, you know, number one, in our lifetime, recently, they proved that they've proved that they can overcome that with the bubble run they went on to the finals. And then number two, if you look at kind of isolate the stretch of basketball that they played between the All-Star break and the end of the season, they went head to head with a bunch of these teams, basically every one of them. They went head to head and they got the better of them. And a lot of those situations were disadvantaged. They had a rest disadvantage. They were on the road. They were up against full strength Bucks, Celtics, Nets, Sixers, and they got wins. And, I don't know what else they have to do to prove that they're a force to be reckoned with. I don't, you know, sitting here today, I think that they're the right play in the futures market based on price alone. you know, but still, it's not going to be easy considering how crowded this conference is.
No, in fact, their first round matchup. Are you one of those people? Because I've kind of come over to this side that I think it might be Atlanta. Just the way Cleveland is stumbling, you could end up with those. I got a feeling the Hawks are capable. Maybe it's recency bias because they got such a great game from DeAndre Hunter. You know, I kind of know Trey was going to play, but I didn't know. I was worried about them without John Collins. I think not having John Collins hurts them in a series against somebody like Miami. But one night against a stumbling Cleveland team that really misses Jared Allen, that's going to be an entertaining game, but that's one where the star power might win out.
Yeah, and, you know, again, kind of anything can happen in one game.
Yeah.
We've seen how important home court is through these four games.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I don't want to completely write off Cleveland, who is a small underdog in this game. But if you've watched any Cleveland basketball since Jared Allen went down, this is not a playoff team. It's if they get in, it will be by the grace of some, you know, the ball bouncing their way in this game. But I think the Hawks are the rightful road favorite. And, you know, I have had a love-hate relationship with them over the balance of this season because it was pretty easy to see the fade on them early. They had a absolutely wicked first third of the season schedule,
yes,
both from a rest disadvantage and strength of opponent. And they got whipped, but they righted the ship well enough to, you know, to have the opportunity to play their way in. And, you know, it's a team that does have experience of winning two playoff series last year. So I don't think you can dismiss them, you know, out of hand. So it's tough for me to see them losing this game to the Cleveland, but it's also very tough for me to see them beating the Heat four times based on some of the limits.
With spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Limitations they have defensively, especially.
Yeah. Let's move on to the series. Everybody, you mentioned it. I think this has been the series everybody's watching closely. Brooklyn Nets at Boston Celtics. This is one of those series where if Robert Williams were healthy, I think a lot of people would be more confident in Boston's ability to at least slow Brooklyn down enough to beat them because Brooklyn doesn't get a lot of stops. How much does it change your mind, or how much do you think that that's impacts the series?
Yeah, Robert Williams is, to me at least, less of a concern in this series as he will be potentially if they move on and face the Bucks in round two. He provided sort of the kind of key fulcrum for what they wanted to do defensively as they matured over the balance of the season to being the best defensive team in the NBA. He was, you know, Marcus Smart looks like he's probably going to get the Defensive Player of the Year award right now. That's fine. That's fair. He was amazing. You know, he deserves accolades for his, you know, dynamic, you know, ability against every level of player. But without Robert Williams, I don't know that that defense is number one in the NBA at the end of the season. And so surely it's going to be more difficult for them to, you know, keep the Nets in check offensively, particularly with, you know, with if Kyrie Irving, one of the fresher set of legs across the NBA. And that definitely has mattered. Fatigue has been a big, big deal this season. 82 game season has worn these guys down to a nub.
With Kyrie the short run up. Like, this is the second year in a row with a shorter than usual offseason, and there's absolutely burnout in both legs and just kind of mentally, I think.
Yeah. All right. And on top of the Olympics being wedged in that tiny window, I mean, everything about it was kind of the widowmaker, perfect storm for these guys to be beaten up. Kyrie's not wearing that same fatigue. So
no, he is not.
He's a tough matchup in general for Boston. I mean, they have length, they have good ability to switch, but he can create a shot in so many different ways that he is very, very, very tough to truly limit. Now, all of that said, the market is pricing this like it's about a 50-50 series, or at least it opened that way. It opened some places with Brooklyn as a favorite. It's getting bet in the direction of the Celtics, where the Celtics are now kind of in the -140 range. So market is basically telling you they have about a 60% chance to win the series. I'm a little bit higher than them on that. I'm like 65-ish%. And this feels like deja vu all over again with a series we saw last year between the Suns and the Lakers. Lakers were pretty clearly not the team that was expected to kind of get to the playoffs. People were like, well, they'll flip the switch. They have LeBron. Like, you know, what have the Suns done? Right. Like, oh, they just put up a great statistical season and they got the 2 seed, big whoop. They never won a playoff series. The Lakers were tilted in the betting markets that entire playoff series. They of course, injuries played a huge role in how this series ultimately played out. But, this feels a lot like that, where you have a complete team that has done everything that's been asked of them, that's proven it time and again throughout the balance of the regular season, consistently getting better, didn't peak too early. And they're taking on a Nets team that just has never really found their form. And, you know, the Nets were 10-point favorites against the Cavaliers in the play-in game, in the 7-8 play-in game. They had home court advantage. They got an awesome performance out of Bruce Brown.
Yeah.
Brown was awesome.
Yeah, he was. Game. He's actually played some really great games down the stretch, period. Like, not just that one, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. They got a great performance out of Brown. Nick Claxton showed up. He was a factor. Kyrie Irving didn't miss a shot for like 3 quarters.
Yep.
And yet, that game was still kind of in the balance with a couple minutes to play. And, you know, as we kind of mentioned, like, Cleveland's not really a playoff, material. And, still the Nets struggled to get that game won and done. And I'm worried about this Nets team living up to the expectations. And if it happens, it's literally, if they beat the Celtics in this series, my general feeling and prediction is it's because Kyrie Irving has so much left in the tank and the Celtics just are a little bit, a little bit fatigued from how hard they've played down the stretch of the season.
But I think you're spot on about, look, missing Robert Williams against the Bucks or even against the Heat with Bam, there's other series where his versatility and switchability defensively is huge. A little less so. I mean, yes, you'd love to be able to switch him on to Kevin Durant's points, but Kevin Durant's going to get Kevin Durant's buckets, regardless of what you do with him. And I'm with you. And by the way, I know Ben Simmons in theory comes back in game. Now he's talking about game four or something. I don't see how that makes it. I mean, I on paper, he's great. He has not played in a game in a year. And last time we saw him play, I'm going to do is put him back in the highest leverage, highest pressure situation. And let's see how he does. Cause last time he saw playoff pressure, that went so well. Yeah. So I'm not sure that really makes the kind of impact they're hoping for. Maybe next year, maybe with a season under him and stuff that changes my feeling about it, but not getting dropped cold into this playoff series. They don't get enough stops. And Boston's offense isn't super elite, but they've got two elite wings who are going to go get buckets, right? Jason Tatum's a all-NBA bottom of the MVP ballot season. Jalen Brown can put up 40 on any given night. They've got shooters. Like, they'll score enough against what's a pretty bad defense. And I just can't see Brooklyn winning a game or two because their guys went off, sure, but I can't see them sustaining it over seven games.
No, I agree with basically everything you just said. Ben Simmons does not move the needle for me at all in this series or these playoffs. In theory, it's a good fit.
Yes.
Long term. Bringing him in, moving Harden for him, long term, great decision. If you can keep, you know, Durant healthy and Kyrie Irving sticks around, that's a good fit. You need shooters, though, because he's a non-shooter. He is an offensive problem for you that you have to solve. And the only way you solve it well by having KD and Kyrie on the floor, but you need two other shooters with him on the floor. And the way that the Nets roster is constituted, they just don't have that right now. They're not getting anywhere close to enough out of Patty Mills or Goran Dragic to be able to run a small ball five.
Nope.
You know, with Durant playing the five with Ben Simmons effectively playing the five, and then four guys that can create offense around them. They're just not good. They're not good enough defensively. You said it. And, realistically, the mindset of the coaching staff, the mindset of the players has to be, you know, we need to go get 130 tonight because they're going to give up a lot of points.
Yeah. They missed Joe Harris. Joe Harris fits right in. I mean, Seth Curry has been great for them, but Joe Harris would change that dynamic in a lot of ways. Drew, we're not going to waste your valuable time discussing the Bucks and Bulls, right? Like, in Chicago, especially with the injuries, but they just kind of, I think they cut, everybody's talking about how they fell apart. To me, they kind of regressed closer to what this is kind of where I thought they'd be. I thought they'd be 5-6-7. I thought they'd be a pretty good team. I didn't think they could stop that many people. They're better than I thought they were at the start of the season. And next year, Lonzo Ball stays healthy. Another year of Patrick Williams. Maybe they're better than I think, but they're going to get.
Yeah.
The gentleman sweep like goes in five.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. That's my general feeling as well. The only kind of commentary I really have for this game, the Bucks are 2-1 right now to win a very crowded Eastern Conference. That's not correct. They are well overpriced by market right now, considering how these guys played down the stretch. If you look at kind of player level advanced statistics and just sort of game by game stuff, Drew Holiday is kind of tailing off. Chris Middleton, he had a down season broadly. Even Giannis has started to show some cracks. And I think the fact that they had such a deep run last year, combined with Middleton and Drew going to, you know, the Olympic experience and then, you know, basically playing this entire season without, without Lopez, so that they all had added usage, more was asked of them. And, I think that they are a little bit fragile, Bucks, right now. And I think that in general, the market is overpricing them. My dream scenario as a bettor is, because I'm all about like market, buy low, sell high. That's my fundamental philosophy and all of this stuff. I really hope the Bucks just utterly work the Bulls. Like, I hope it's not competitive and that this overprice that exists currently for the Bucks gets even worse. And, you know, that idea of, you know, them just, you know, beating up on an unworthy opponent in the Bulls, or at least just a beaten down, an injured opponent in the Bulls, and then turning around and drawing the Celtics or the Nets next round as, you know, kind of a sharpened, informed team. They're going to have their hands full and the market's going to make them a road favorite in that series. So I'm kind of excited for that opportunity in round two to bet against this, this Bucks team. I just need to cross my fingers that, things play out as we expect.
Yeah. I think with the Bucks, the bet is, or the belief I should say, is this is a team that can flip the switch. Like that they have treated the regular season like champions tend to treat the regular season, which is, I'm not interested. You know, I'm not that interested. We'll be fine. I'm curious though if they'll be able to do that when it does really matter. So, it's, but we're not, I, again. But the first round, I'm with you. This is not competitive, and the Bulls are a nice story. They are a better team than they were. They're building something there, but we'll see. Move on to since we're in the East, the other series. Drew, maybe I just miss Game of Thrones, so I'm fully in We the North mode. I am ready to travel north, but I sneakily like the Raptors here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I anyone that feels that way, I'm not going to talk them out of it, because it's pretty clear that, they have been underrated by the market for almost this entire season. No one expected them to be a top five seed in the East. I think their preseason win total was like 36 games or something.
Yeah.
They threw a lot of people off their scent because they played last season in Tampa and it was effectively a tank. What do you know? They get Scottie Barnes out of it. So, it ends up, basketball gods did not shun them for tanking last year, but, I guess playing in Tampa was punishment enough. But the general, vibe of this Raptors team is flexibility, athleticism, size, length, hustle. They kind of embody
switchable.
And they embody everything, good veteran leadership in Van Vliet and Siakam. Like, these guys are champions. Like, they have everything. They check every box for like a live underdog, surely. And who do they draw? Well, they drew a team that has perennial disappointments in James Harden and, playoff perennial disappointment in Joel Embiid. Maybe that's not fair, but
I got a feeling he's gonna have. They don't really have a great matchup for him. So, like, I think he could have a massive series.
Oh, he better. He's gonna have to do it all himself, really, because Harden looks completely out of form. The aging curve that clearly hit Russell Westbrook last year and has gotten even more serious this year looks like the same aging curve may be hitting Harden. He's just a little bit behind, I've seen shocking decision making by defenses facing the Sixers, who are like, we'll give Harden space. We are not worried at all about you blowing by us trying to get to the hoop anymore. Your burst, your speed, it's just not there. And his step back three is, slightly less efficient than it was. He's not getting the calls that he used to. And so his offensive game just isn't close to what he was two seasons ago, on top of the fact that his defensive game is a massive liability. And that puts a ton of pressure on Embiid too, because he forces the switches, away from him. And the cast of characters they have around those guys just isn't as good as what we were promised. Tobias Harris clearly is nowhere close to the level of player that he was a couple of seasons ago when they almost beat the Raptors. So realistically, this feels like a series that could go sideways badly for the Sixers. However,
yeah,
I haven't bet the Raptors. I haven't touched them.
Yeah.
And I think realistically, the Raptors have a real advantage the farther the series goes distance wise. Game six, they get at home, no Thibault. Game seven, you get Doc Rivers and Harden in a do or die situation, which generally has been favorable for your opponent. So I think realistically, the Raptors need to find a way to get to two wins before before the Sixers can get to four. And so if it's 3-2, if it's 2-2, Sixers are in deep trouble. But that doesn't mean the Sixers and Embiid going nuclear couldn't win this series 4-1.
No, I think that's the matchup where they just, if the shooting is knocking down stuff around him, if we get if you have to start throwing everything at Embiid and then Korkmaz and everybody else starts knocking down shots, you got a chance. That is still not a great defensive team. Again, I think there's places to attack them, but they do have Thibault. They do have a very good defensive center in Embiid. But the more I look at this, the more I think Toronto's just a real problem for them. And it's because of that depth and that versatility, right? Like, yeah, Pascal Siakam's their best player, but they can attack you with a variety of guys. Van Vliet is both a really underrated defender, but also a guy who can go get you points one night and create offense. And they've got guys who can finish. And Scotty Barnes has just really morphed at the end of the season, hasn't he? Like, he's just,
yes, yeah,
just really taken off into a guy they can trust to make plays. There's just a lot to like there. And I've just come to not trust these 76ers. Like you said, James Harden doesn't look, I don't know if this was the season or if at 32 and burning the candle at both ends for a long time has caught up. I'm not sure what's going on there, but this is a bad matchup for him because, man, that's a team that can roll out a lot of long athletic defenders. And Harden will get his, but he's going to have to work for it. And like you said, his playoff history is not confidence inspiring.
Yeah. No, I think one other thing about this series, I think last Thursday's game was pretty instructive. Philly went up to Toronto. They were at full strength minus Thibault. Yeah. Toronto had no Fred VanVleet, no OG Anunoby.
Yeah.
And so basically they started the game with a center and four forwards on the floor. Like, yeah. I think I watched the first 6 minutes of that game. Raptors had about 2 points and I was like, what was the plan here, man? Like, what are we doing? Like, yeah. who's, and you know, what was the idea about that offense? It didn't make sense. Well, Nick Nurse made a couple of adjustments after, you know, about the 8 minute mark, and the Raptors end up with 119 points. They beat the Sixers by 5. The Sixers, if the Sixers win that game, they win the Atlantic and they take home, you know, they get home court advantage over whoever they face in round 2 and maybe even round 3 if something happens to the Heat. So, you know, they get the 2 seed, and instead they played a very uninspiring, you know, 7/8 of that game and you know, lost to a team in the Raptors in that moment that didn't have their point guard. Like, it was not just in their backup point guard only played 12 minutes. So they have, you know, but the other side of the coin there is all these guys, Trent, Barnes, Siakam.
Yep.
They can all handle the ball well, and yep, they can all do the role. They can all, you know, they can all take on the role of distributor, shot creator, run the offense. Siakam finished that game with a triple double. He had 12 assists. And you know, if you have a player with that kind of, you know, if you have a roster, I guess, with that kind of versatility, and you have a coach in Nick Nurse who's I have huge, huge respect for, and
yeah,
who generally has, you know, excellent vision, excellent, you know, in game, in series adjustment history, then, yeah, the longer the series goes, the deeper trouble Philly is in.
Yeah. You get to game 6 and 7. I just trust Nick Nurse a lot more than I do Doc and histories there. It's going to be an interesting East, though. I think you're right. The second round, if that ends up being Boston versus Milwaukee, Robert Williams' return, that's where they'll need him. But, man, oof, that series is going to be fun.
Yeah.
And even whoever comes out of 4-5 against the Heat. This is just, the East is really entertaining. In a way, I'm not totally sure the West is, Drew.
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look at it. Actually, we'll start there. The Clippers are, a 4-point favorite going in against the Pelicans. I think the Pelicans have a shot in this one. The way CJ McCollum has them kind of rallied. Look, the Clippers, I think, will play better. They still got, they're a tight team. They're a high IQ team. They're veterans. They've been in big moments. They've still got Paul George, but there's some spunkiness about the Pelicans right now that's kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. They're tough to figure out as well.
Yeah, exactly.
They had a very easy finish to the season schedule-wise, but it coincided with everybody figuring out their role and responsibility and playing really well. So they are, they may be a little overrated, but at the same time, you know, as you saw last night, when it looks good, it looks really good. And they have good spacing. CJ McCollum can find his you know, his shot relatively easily considering who else he's on the floor with. Brandon Ingram is as good as we remember him being, even though we haven't seen him and he hasn't, you know, he hasn't had a healthy season. Doesn't change the fact that he is still kind of maturing and getting closer to his peak as a player. So, you know, he's a dangerous weapon. And, you know, I think the market seems very convinced that the Clippers are going to win that game. And I am not feeling great about that.
Yeah. I think the Clippers, look, I think they should be the favorite. I trust that they're going to hit a certain level of performance, and they've kind of done that all year, but this is how I felt about, even with Paul George back, this is how I felt about them all year, which is, that's a good team. They're hard to play against. They've got a great coach. They did a fantastic job making Carl Anthony Towns' life. I mean, if it wasn't for Anthony Edwards kind of having a breakout night, Clippers are in as the, you know, Clippers are going up against Memphis. And all that said, there's a ceiling to how good they are right now. Without Kawhi Leonard, there's a cap on them.
We agree. Yeah. And it's, they're well coached. They do have a lot of the same things we talked about with, you know, in the same context as the Heat and as the same context as the Raptors.
Yeah.
You know, when the going got tough against the Timberwolves in that fourth quarter and the, they needed to find offense. It was literally like, no, you shoot, no, you shoot, no, you shoot.
Yeah.
You know, and it's in those moments, if the offense stalls like that, then you got a problem.
And we've seen that a little bit from them all season. I mean, I've go to a number of Clipper games and watch them out here. And that's that fourth quarter having to move the ball to find offense, that against a good defense that starts to struggles. We'll see if they can pull it off. Then, Drew, we get into the series where it feels like it's all about the injury report.
Yeah.
Golden State, Denver. I know that the always reliable Draymond Green came out and said on a podcast today that basically he thinks Steph Curry's ready to go, that he'll be good to go. Obviously, that swings this series pretty dramatically one way or the other, because the Warriors' offense is just so dependent upon the gravity of Curry to open up everything.
Yeah. Yeah. The general read on Curry is tough.
Yeah.
And honestly, if I'm the Warriors, I think we may be better off over the balance of these playoffs if we let some of the younger guys get their feet wet in real situations. If Poole and Kuminga have to carry some of the offensive load for this team in a series that you should win pretty comfortably against, you have the league MVP obviously in Jokic, but the rest of that Nuggets squad is absolutely, no better than, you know, your teams that are finishing at the top of the lottery here.
Yeah.
So it's pretty, it would be pretty surprising for a team like the Warriors who have a player in Draymond Green who matches up well against their best player in Jokic from a defensive versus offensive standpoint. You should be able to get this series done in short order, even if Curry continues to stay on the sidelines. If you want to integrate Curry towards the end of the series so he can get back, you know, get some reps and get some, get some conditioning back on the floor, that makes sense to me. But I think I would exercise caution with Curry in games 1 and 2 in this series. See if you can get Poole and Kuminga and some of these guys to, you know, really embrace their embrace the roles that you established for them in the regular season, carry those into the playoffs, get them in the high energy, high intensity environment, get them that experience. And then, the Warriors are a tough out all of a sudden. So,
yeah,
you know, I think today, Thursday, we're expecting to learn one way or the other about Curry and walkthrough. I'm guessing if he doesn't participate, then he's not going to go in game 1. Does that sound right?
They're running, like you said, a walkthrough, a little scrimmage today. And Steve Kerr basically said that. Basically said, hey, we're going to see how he does, how he feels. Then we're going to see how he responds, like, the next day. And they said his thing was, by Friday morning, we'll know, like, one way or the other. So I imagine we'll hear something out of practice today and then get something more definitive on Friday. And with you, there's not a huge need to rush, although I don't know how. Denver's been feisty all year, and Jokic is a problem, and be careful giving teams life. But at the end of the day, without Murray, without Porter, they're just, talk about a team with a ceiling. Like, the getting this far was really impressive, and an amazing job by Jokic and guys stepping up and hitting some shots. But
sure,
this is a tough spot for them. Yep. More dangerous though. Dallas is going up against a Utah team that just seems to be in its own head. They are the kings of blown leads. They are really struggling, but there's still talent there. And if you don't have Jokic, I mean, if you don't have Doncic at the start of this series for a couple of games and you give Utah life, uh-oh. Like, I just don't, the potential of Utah is still there if you think that they can flip that switch and kind of find themselves again.
Yeah. And what's interesting about this team, because the Jazz, that is, they fit the mold of a lot of teams we've seen over the years. They had some outstanding regular season success. The metrics were screaming, this team is elite. Then you get into a playoff best of seven series and you find out that you're solvable. And it happened now multiple playoff runs in a row. And even, you know, in some situations where you had huge circumstantial advantages last year without Kawhi on the floor.
Yeah, exactly.
And it still didn't bounce your way. And this season they take a step backwards in terms of overall team efficiency in a lot of categories. And, you know, you start to hear swirling talk about, oh, do they really like each other? Or, like, it's time to blow it up. Like, they bring in Danny Ainge, who presumably would be the catalyst for, you know, finding a way to really shuffle the roster.
Oh,
here.
Danny Ainge is known as patient, Drew. He's a calm, relaxed guy.
Well, there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. I'll say that much.
Among the changes that I think are coming to Utah this offseason, there will be fewer cooks.
Yeah.
Not sure how deep, again, if they get bounced in the first round or frankly, even the second, and it's not competitive.
Yeah.
Changes are coming, and I'll just say that's the front office changes are one of the big ones I heard, but how deep that well goes remains to be seen.
Yeah. So we sit here and we know all of this about this team, and yet they are still good enough, talented enough, dynamic enough that they can be a problem and a difficult out. What you said that resonated to me really was, if things go sideways, that's the catalyst for these guys are already ready to quit.
Yep.
And they just need some reason, right? And if they are now meaningful favorites to a Dallas team without Luka in game one and two, and they lose those games, like, Quinn Snyder really going to get these guys to get up in that locker room for game three and rescue this series? It seems like that all of the kindling is there. The gasoline was sprayed all over the place. And, like, all it needs is a match at this point.
Yeah.
And if they win this series, the guy puts the match back in the box and takes a couple steps away. Right.
Yeah.
But he's always kind of like around the corner. And, they are a dangerous team in both, volatile in both directions. I don't have any interest in them from a future standpoint or in this series. A lot of people have made big plays on them who had information about Luka before it was public, moved the market pretty significantly. I don't disagree with the current price at all. And my dream scenario, if I was in the writer's room for the for the NBA playoffs and they were asking me for a script for this series, I would give them Dallas splits at home, no Luka. Dallas loses game three and game four without Luka. He comes back for Dallas game five, plays guts through it, gets them to a win, pulls a miraculous comeback in game six, and then it's game seven, full strength in Dallas against a team that's ready to quit, in which case Mavericks finally get their the long coveted round one series win for Luka Doncic. Like, that would be a very cool thing for basketball. And I'm hopeful that we see him at some point in the series.
Yeah.
My read on his availability is I think he almost certainly misses game one and two. We're talking about Saturday early game, which would mean that they're going to be
the first game on Saturday, right? Yeah. And then, Monday. We have not seen the full schedule yet, but they will probably go Monday, possibly Tuesday.
Yeah. The way that they usually, if you're the first game on Saturday, it usually trickles into you play Monday.
Okay. Yep.
You get 2 days off, you play Thursday, you play Saturday. So I think you're talking about a little over a week and change of rest there. That's probably not enough. So no. Game five would be Tuesday, the 26th, I believe.
Yeah.
I would circle that on your calendar. I think that realistically, I think that is when Luka could presumably come back. And I think the pressure, you know, if assuming that the Mavericks don't get swept, which is not a zero chance, but let's assume that they win one of those first four games, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Luka to take the court, irrespective of the severity of the injury, I would guess.
Yeah, Jeff Stotts had this, that the average was 16 days, which would for, but the problem is the calf strains, it's so, it could be 3 days, it could be, you know, 3 weeks. It's such a an injury with variance because of the complexity of the calf muscle and everything else. If it ends up being that, and you're right, I think that there starts to be real pressure on him to come back around game four, game five, depending on where that series stands at that point.
16 days is the 26th. That would be game five.
Yeah. So that's the average. I think that you'd see him push through. And what we do know about Luka is A, playoff performer. Yeah. And B, his game isn't based. It's not like bringing, well, I'm trying to think of the right person. John Morant comes back from a calf injury. Like, is he still explosive? Is he still like you're guys whose game is based on that pure athleticism, but that's not who Doncic is, right? Like, he's more athletic than you think, but his game isn't based on being able to just jump out of the gym against everybody. So he should be able to walk back in and play at a pretty high level. By the way, Drew, I am fully enjoying the Dallas, like, going full NHL. It's a lower leg injury, basically. Right? and then my favorite was still Jason Kidd in the press conference, and they're like, well, what grade is the sprain? And he's like, those things have grades? Like, he played dumb, like there were calf grade sprains. I'm like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. I mean, as long as we get to see him play. He's been performing at top three.
Yeah, he had a slower start to the season. He was fourth on my MVP ballot. If he played like this all year, the last thing I needed was one more person near the top of that ballot.
Yeah, right. Great point. Yeah, but no, I think from, you know, and I completely give him a pass for coming in a little out of sorts. You know, he put a ton of minutes in for the Slovenian.
He carried them to the fourth. Yeah. Remember, they finished fourth. They almost medaled.
Yeah.
They made it to the medal game.
That was something. And so he basically got 0.0 off season. And not a surprise to see him start slow. Cool to see him finish the way he did. But for him to progress to where we know his ceiling is as a player, he desperately needs, a playoff run. It's got to be more than one round. And the fact that he's going to miss the first three, four games of the series is just, it's the worst. Yeah. You need him out there.
Yep. The basketball series that every basketball insider is excited about, like Minnesota and Memphis, might end up, well, it's because it's got John Morant, maybe not. I was about to say it becomes the NBA TV series. Maybe not. The honorary Atlanta Hawks and NBA TV series. But maybe not with John Morant. That said, I'm not sure it draws the excitement of some of these, but It's going to be fun, man. Two up-and-coming teams, Cat, you know, Karl-Anthony Towns, John Morant, Desmond Bane, Anthony Edwards. Like, I expect to be wholly entertained by this series. I'm just not sure the Timberwolves can win it.
Yeah. Dead on read.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be fun. I'm excited to get a more, like, the Grizzlies also fit a mold of a team we've seen a lot over the last handful of years. It's been a while since we've seen one this good, this fast of a breakout, right? I think the last analog you could probably point to is when Steph Curry really emerged for the Warriors in what was that, 2013-14 time window?
Yeah.
Where all of a sudden they went from lottery team to like, oh, they have a foundation here that is awesome, right? Like, that's the feeling I get about the Memphis team. Like, if we flash forward 3 years, are we going to be like, man, this team, you know, who is going to beat Memphis? Like, they're the proverbial favorites year in, year out. Like, I won't be surprised. Like, they have a ton of capital. They have a really good young nucleus, but they've won and done nothing in the playoffs. And
I think you have to learn how to win in the NBA. And the other thing that with this team specifically is, they're a pretty mediocre half-court offense. And we said that about the Heat, but I've seen Jimmy Butler, right? Like, I can see the path. I'm not sure that as much as I love Ja Morant and that roster, I think they have to be a little better in the half-court, and I think that this is the season they learn some lessons, right? I still think you have to kind of learn how to win, and you can transfer. You can be the 2008 Celtics or Chris Paul coming into the Suns, and you can bring knowledge with you, but you got to pick it up somewhere, and I just don't think they've picked it up yet.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what that reminds me? This reminds me a lot of, actually, when Jokic first took the leap and the Nuggets finished second in the West.
Yeah.
That year. And they drew a Spurs team that they were clearly better than. But they took them seven. And it was all about the inexperience on the Nuggets side. They didn't really have the, because it takes time. Even if you have a very good coach, it takes time to just learn how to win a series.
Yeah.
That kind of referred to it earlier as like the Jazz were solved, right? Yeah. Well, a playoff series, a best of seven series where your opponent is the same, nothing really changes game in, game out over best of seven. You have to come up with the adjustments that get you that advantage if it's close. And this series is closer than the Grizzlies would probably like. I mean, the Timberwolves are a really talented team. They also have a lot of really good young players. They don't have any playoff experience to speak of, really, but it doesn't change the fact that that on any given night, the Timberwolves can, you know, they can, you know, put up a really, really tough fight. Just ask the Clippers. I mean,
yeah.
Pat Beverly, not a guy you want to play. He is a very tough guy to play against. Anthony Edwards certainly looks like he can walk the part of like big moment. Can he?
I think that was a huge leap. I mean, yes, it's just a play-in game, but the way he stepped up when Karl-Anthony Towns was game planned out of that was huge.
All right, 100% agree. And realistically, I think, you know, if you told me out of the series we know, one of these is going to go the distance, what, you know, what's it going to be? Memphis, Milwaukee has to be in the discussion.
Yeah.
This is going to be a hard fought series, I think. Yeah, right. And the betting market was not as, not as high on Memphis as I thought they were going to be. Memphis got a ton of respect game by game down the home stretch. Like, they were massive favorites in a bunch of games where you would have thought they would be kind of, you know, just decent respect, but they were getting big time respect. And yet they opened in like the minus 300 range against the Timberwolves, which was surprising. I thought we were going to see like minus 500 ish or so. But ultimately, I do think this is going to be a really competitive one.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Well, Drew, thank you for doing this and jumping in and talking. This is, again, Drew Dinsick from NBC Sports Edge, who had the bad beat of picking Clayton Kershaw to throw a perfect game and then watching him get pulled in the seventh inning.
He'll get it next time, I'm sure.
Yeah,
right?
I'm sure those things come around all the time.
Next time.
Yeah, we're both out here in Southern California. There was some animosity.
What was that about?
I get the pitch count thing, but they're perfect game, man. Got to anyway. We'd love to do this again down the line. This was fun, and everybody again. You can find him. You walk me through this. I believe Whale Capper is the.
Whale_Capper is Twitter. My Twitter handle goes back to the days when I was not in media and I was just an anonymous guy posting numbers and bets. so it's at Whale_Capper.
And you guys have a morning show every morning or a number of mornings a week on NBC Edge?
Yeah, daily pod over for NBC Sports Edge called Bet the Edge. The lovely Sarah Perlman is our host. She's a pro's pro.
She's great host and I'd take some of her betting advice too. She's really smart on this stuff.
Yeah. She follows very, very closely and she'll have some good prop plays for the playoffs, I'm sure. You can either watch us live on YouTube and chat along. We get a lot of good questions. There's some people who come and drop their own tips in there and, you know, give betting advice we go up in podcast form as well. So that is the daily exercise that is a lot of fun talking betting.
All right, cool. Well, thank you for doing this. We'll talk again soon. And everybody, we'll be back next week, Dan Feldman and or I, with probably some basketball games to talk about. So I imagine we'll be doing a little of that next week.
Best time of the year.
It is. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week.
Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot and also at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.